Try a subscription to Gardener's World magazine for just $14.99 and find inspiration for your garden. You and a loved one can enjoy two-for-one entry to hundreds of gardens nationwide. Visit buysubscriptions.com/May24 to subscribe.
This episode is brought to you by the Inspire Collection by Kalia. Just because you're working out doesn't mean you shouldn't look fabulous. The Inspire Collection by Kalia was designed with both style and performance in mind. It looks good, feels good, and stays put no matter how you move. And the collection has everything you need for a day at the gym. A support bra, crop tanks, bike shorts, amazing leggings, and more. It's their most versatile collection yet. Shop the Inspire Collection by Kalia now, exclusively at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Hello and welcome to the BBC Gardener's World magazine podcast, brought to you by the team here at the magazine. Join us as we chat all things gardening with the nation's favourite experts.
Do you strive to do more for wildlife in your garden? Are you cheered by the birds that visit your feeders or the frogs that spawn in your pond? Many of us already work hard for nature in our outdoor spaces and know the value of welcoming wildlife in, not just for the species that share our space, but for our own mental health and well-being also. Hello, I'm Kate Bradbury, and today I'm in conversation with the wonderful Deborah Meaden, star of BBC Dragon's Den, entrepreneur and nature enthusiast. As well as supporting climate-friendly businesses and championing the natural world, she also has a rather amazing garden, and I started by asking her to describe it.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? I don't think it's my amazing garden. It's kind of a garden that created itself. We bought an old farmhouse. It had virtually no garden at all. In fact, it had lots of yards, lots of big barns, and quite a few burnt-out tractors on it. But we bought the house and it was pretty dilapidated, but we bought it because it had really lovely bone structure. And all we've really done is sort of taken things away and allowed it to become itself again. But what that means is sort of around the house, there's more quite formal. I'm not a really terribly formal garden girl, but quite a lot of structure around the house in that sort of the close proximity. And then beyond that, It's very natural. You know, we love birds, we love wildlife, and you don't move to the country and then make it sterile so that, you know, creatures can't live in it. So, you know, it's sort of tightly around us, pretty organised. That then beyond that, we just do everything we can to encourage nature.
Amazing. It sounds absolutely amazing. So tell me about the wildlife. I mean, what species do you get in? What's your favourite?
Well, we're so lucky. So when we first turned up here, we had literally our first summer. We moved in August and we had one swallow sitting on a wire. We now have swallows, swifts, house martins, owls. We have two barn owls. We have a little owl and tawny owl. We have the occasional otter visit us. We have a pond outside our back door and it comes up the reeds, not frightened of us at all. It eats all of our fish in the pond. And we have a plethora of birds, including linnets and nightingales. So, no, we're incredibly lucky. And the lovely thing is we're still discovering it. You know, we still hear a bird song and think, oh, what's that? We haven't heard that before. So, no, we feel very lucky.
Wow. So you've got otters eating fish in your ponds. That's incredible.
And a kingfisher. And a kingfisher sharing. I've never seen a kingfisher in my life. And I walked out. And I've always wanted to. They always look such beautiful birds. And we walked out of our back door and sitting on the oar that was sort of leant up against the boat was a kingfisher. And it moved me to tears. You know, it was like, I can't believe my first kingfisher was actually on our pond.
Oh, that's so gorgeous. And I mean, that's the beauty of wildlife, isn't it? And I think wildlife gardening particularly, you know, you create these moments for yourself that then just keep rewarding you over time. You know, when you get your first frogs and your first toad, but a kingfisher and an otter in the pond is just, yeah, I'm just, yeah, quite mind blown at the moment. And the swifts and the house martins, do they nest in your house? Do the swallows, do you have barns for them? Are they...
We have a lot of barns. And actually the owl, one of the barn owls, I thought it was the same barn owl, to be honest, because, you know, how do you tell? But actually we saw in really close proximity, we saw one of the barn owls nesting in our, we've got a very old Georgian barn. And the other one nests, because they kind of, you know, they make a home there, but they're out and about a lot. But down in one of the field shelters. But the swifts and the swallows, we don't knock their nests. We encourage them. We leave openings for them. And actually this last year, we were really worried for them. We had quite a lot of swifts, funnily enough. But our swallow numbers were really quite well down. Whereas some years we've seen them try to raise a third clutch. You know, if they've got here early enough, they might be on their third clutch by the time they go. So our skies can be filled with it.
Yeah, it is worrying, isn't it? The decline of swallows. I mean, they've got such a treacherous journey to get here. It's amazing that any of them do. I'm hoping they have a good year this year. Yeah. And what about hedgehogs, Deborah?
Never seen a hedgehog.
Never seen a hedgehog.
No hedgehogs in our garden. Now, I don't know. We're not that low onto the levels, but we get quite waterlogged. I don't know if that causes an issue. It's strange because we have a lot of hedge, you know, if you look at our, in fact, we put a lot of hedges in. So you'd think that there was quite a good habitat for them. But I've never, ever seen a hedgehog. But we do have a lot of badgers. And I wonder if badgers are affecting the numbers. Never seen one. I'd love one.
It could be badgers. And certainly in rural areas, hedgehogs are declining at a much greater rate than urban areas. In fact, in urban areas, they've slowly started to creep up, which is amazing.
Oh, so why is that? Why is it?
I think it's partly to do with the wonderful campaign Hedgehog Street, where groups of neighbours get together and they cut holes into their fences and they feed hedgehogs and they leave compost, you know, all the wildlife friendly things. And so the last time they did State of Hedgehogs report was 2018. And they said that the declines were slowing. And this just recently, just a few weeks ago, they released another statement that said it looks like actually their fates are improving, which is wonderful. I get about 5 hedgehogs in my tiny garden.
Oh, don't you see? I've got hedgehog envy now.
Oh, I'll swap you an otter and a kingfisher. So fingers crossed that you do. The hedgehogs find you. It sounds like they're missing out.
We do actually. I didn't mention them, and I think they're probably my favourites. I don't know why I didn't mention them, but you also get hare. In fact, we rescued a baby hare that was definitely abandoned because I know, young leverets are often left, aren't they, for their mother for a long time, you know, so people rescue them and not realising that actually, you know, they're just waiting for their mum to return. But we did. It was definitely abandoned in the middle of some gravel. And we took it off to Secret World and it was nursed back to life. And then they released it back on our land. And I keep seeing this. Well, we see quite a lot of hares around, but I keep thinking, oh, I do hope one of you is Pebble.
Oh, Pebble the hare. And I suppose now it's March, isn't it? So they're boxing.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I love it. I could watch them. We've got a big field that we do, but we make hay out of. And just seeing them over there, just having a good old scrap. It's great.
That sounds wonderful. I've never seen a boxing hare. It's very much on my list to go and see some one day. So tell me how the garden makes you feel, Deborah, on a day-to-day basis. How much do you love it?
I start every day, rain, shine, ice, snow, getting a cup of tea in my hand and wandering around the close garden. It's pretty muddy. We're on a clay soil. It's pretty muddy generally. But we've got paviours that allow us to walk all the way around the garden. So that's my start to the day. And I do that religiously because it makes me a better person. It connects me with the world. It gives me a moment of peace to get my mind together, you know, and breathe some fresh air. And particularly on a busy day, I always make time for that. So I find it really, really grounding. And I think having come through lockdown, I know it's been we're out in the open again now, but what I really appreciated is that the rhythm that both the garden and nature gives you, because in a world where everything felt like it had stood still, The flowers still came up in spring. You know, the birds still sang. The animals still needed feeding, you know, and it gave me a real rhythm to life. And I so appreciate that now. You don't appreciate it when you're really busy and you don't pay attention to it. But when you've actually had to stop and just watch that rhythm, you know, I really appreciate it.
So do you think you appreciate it more since lockdown? Has lockdown just given you an increased love of the garden?
I think so. It gave me time to really sit and guilt-free watch it, but not just as a voice, you know, not just watching it, but feeling part of it. When you watch it long enough, you know, you begin to realize that this is actually all going all around you. It's not like a cinema screen where you sit here and you watch what's going on out there. You realize that actually you're forming part of nature's world, and the birds are, you know, I'm in their world, and they you know, they avoid me, or they nest over there, or that, you know, so I felt more like I was in it as opposed to just observing it. And that felt like quite an honor. You know, it felt like I am actually part of this, you know, because sometimes us human beings, we tend to think that we're these superior beings over there, and we watch everything else go on like some kind of guardian, when in actual fact, you know, nature's pretty clever. And if we just sat in it a little bit more, I'm sure we'd all feel a lot better for it.
In your formal area, do you do the gardening, Deborah? Would you say you are green-fingered?
I am not at all green-fingered, but I'll have a go. I'm actually quite good at weeding. I love weeding. I love weeding after the rain when the weeds come up really easily and you manage to get all of the roots out. But I think I'm the most annoying type, which is I have a view. and it's poor old Phil who looks after the garden. It's his nightmare when I go to Chelsea every year, because I come back with, you know, these big ideas about what we're going to do. And I think he leaves it for a couple of weeks and I forget about it and we stay where we were. But no, I do. I enjoy gardening, but I'm not that experienced, although I am a really, really good weeder. And I am a little bit of that gardener who kind of gives it a go. And I'm a great believer. If I put a plant in somewhere and it dies, it probably doesn't want to be there. It's probably in the wrong spot. And I've got plants that I love my plants. They absolutely know where they want to be. I've got plants that have migrated from one, not just one end of the garden to the other, round the corner, you know, and into the other garden, and they found their home. And then I've adapted the garden to say, okay, that's where you want to be. You stay there, you know, and I'll change, you know, I'll make sure that you're in the, you know, you feel happy there. So yeah, it's, you know, I've got a great respect for my garden. It knows how to garden itself.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So you've got quite a laissez-faire attitude to the garden itself, or do you get Phil to, you know, keep it quite tidy? You know, in your near garden, is that quite formal and well managed, or do you?
It's a combination of the two. I've learned to not get quite so stressed out about weeds, you know, because you've always got weeds. I don't care. You can spend days weeding a bed and think every single one's out, and you turn your back and you look back and there's a weed, you know. So I've got less, you know, we plant because we want low maintenance. So, you know, generally plants that are going to have a little bit of ground cover, and we will try to plant sort of the more ground covery plants with some of those that are more susceptible to weeds, just to, so that the design of the garden helps us manage the weeds. But I have become a little bit more relaxed about it. And certainly we've got a very big vegetable patch. We grow most of our own vegetables, and certainly in the summer we're self-sufficient. And, you know, that used to be pristine. There was a lot of time spent pulling weeds out of that. And now we're like, do you know what? They're not doing any harm. They're not affecting, as long as they don't affect the crop, stay where you are.
Brilliant. And have you found that by having that attitude, by being more relaxed about weeds and pests and things in the vegetable garden, have you found that the vegetable garden looks after itself a bit better?
Well, we're completely organic. We don't spray at all anywhere on the property. The only thing we've had to tackle, we had a really bad infestation of mare's tail, and that we just couldn't get to the bottom of, you know, and it took a lot of heart rate. Oh, do we spray it? What do we do with it? We had to, because that's all, you know, it was killing absolutely everything around it. We will use things like nematodes to control some of the vine weevils. So, you know, we will use some traps, box moth trap. We had quite a bad attack of box moth this year, last year, and so you know we will set the box moth traps, but we don't spray at all. And if you are going to have that attitude, I guess you, and actually, sorry, if you are going to have that attitude, and you are patient enough, you do find that it does balance itself out more. We've got more birds. We've got birds that will eat the slugs. You know, we used to have a lot of slugs and snail. Well, now you can see the evidence. The thrush has been in and there's sort of, you know, snail shells everywhere. So if you've got the patience, nature does kind of find a way of balancing it out, you know, but you do have to have patience because there's definitely moments in there where we're thinking, oh, no, we need to intervene. But we didn't. We held our nerve.
Good. Well done. I mean, even I, you know, hardened, seasoned wildlife gardener, I still, if I walk past a really big infestation of aphids, I think, oh, my plants are being attacked. But yeah, I always find it's more interesting to leave them, because if you leave the aphids, then the hoverflies come and then they lay eggs and then the hoverflies start eating the aphids. And then the birds, the house sparrows, just pick through for their third brood. And then you get wasps coming in. Oh, it's amazing. I just, it's better than telly, not better than Dragon's Den, obviously.
I'm glad you said that.
But
it's a lot more ruthless than Dragon's Den, though, that's for sure, isn't it? I mean, nature can be quite cruel.
Oh, it is. You know, we hoverflies and then wasps and sparrows, and it's all just eat. And it's incredible. It's incredible to watch. I mean, I suppose with 26 acres, you probably don't have many neighbours.
Yeah, we don't. And actually, the house does sit in the middle of the property. And I mean, we've got a place in London because obviously I spend a lot of time traveling as well. And this is very much our sanctuary. So we did choose to be somewhere where we were, you know, I could pull up the drawbridge, shut the door behind me. And if I chose to just be on my own, obviously not on my own, I have, you know, with Paul, but for us to be on our own. So yes, we don't have neighbours, but we are actually surrounded by farmland. And that in itself is an issue because some of the farmers, they're organic and they're very, you know, careful about the way they manage their land. And some of the farmers, they spray and we get drift, you know. So as much as we're organic and we've got bees and we worry about the bees, you know, you can't control obviously what's beyond your borders. So we have to think very carefully about the placing of the bees, although obviously they're going to go wherever they want to go. But, you know, and also accept that there's probably certain sections of the farm that are not completely organic because, as I say, they will get spray drift.
I mean, do you think that your being there and all the amazing work that you've done on the land has influenced any of the farmers around?
Well, we've definitely got some really good farmers who have been winning environmental wars for a long time. And actually, they've helped me, you know, so I can't say I've influenced them. They've helped me. And interestingly, this in February this year, we had a hedgerow expert come in because we wanted to manage our hedges for wildlife. Megan came around, we walked around, we came up with a new plan for the cutting and the, you know, the trimming and the maintenance and we talked to the local contractor who then came and did the work for us, and he was really interested in what we were doing. And that's really good news because he does a lot of the farms around us, and that's how the word spreads. And he went, oh, actually, no, this is really interesting. So hopefully, you know, word of mouth will mean that they will all start adopting some of the same methods.
Have you got any plans next for the garden? Have you got any big projects that you want to do? Any wildlife habitats you've yet to create?
Well, we have added most years. So we had a really damp patch by one of the sheep fields, actually. And so we decided that we would create a proper wildlife. So we sort of fenced it off so that, but I've got cats and they're not great for wildlife. So we fenced it off to make sure that there was a section there that nothing could get into. Well, I say nothing, obviously, wildlife could get into. And we sort of dug out some natural ponds and left it. I mean, and this is the amazing thing about nature. You know, we dug it all out. It looked like a scar on the earth, you know, mud everywhere and just looked awful. And we just left it, and it's beautiful now. You know, it's wildflowers that we haven't seen in other parts of the property, you know, have come up. We've got these lovely rushes and reeds, and we've got loads of frogspawn sitting in there at the moment. Dragonflies, we get the huge number of dragonflies. So I don't know what's next. We have got to do some hedge laying. Some of our hedges are so old and so so poor, top heavy, you know, big gaps at the bottom, top heavy, that we're probably going to embark on quite a big hedge laying project.
Wow. And then you'll get more birds, I'm sure, as a result of it. Fantastic.
I do hope so. That's the plan. That is the plan.
So lastly, have you got any tips for our listeners?
I think the biggest thing, actually, I think of my garden as on a small scale, because actually when I'm in it, I'm in the bit that I'm in. You know, I don't stand there and stare out at this vast expanse, because actually everything has its own little ecosystem, you know, and vine weevils, they're not my favourite, but they're over in that bit of the garden, you know, and then I've got aphids over in that bit of the garden. I've got chafer grubs over, you know, so everybody has its own thing. And I think for me, when I learned to relax a little bit about and not worry about both the pests and the level of weeds, you know, I'm not talking about the mare's tail type things, but the things that actually are quite pretty. We've got an abundance of speedwell, hardly any at all last year, and we were about to pull it out. And I said, leave it, because it's going to be full of those lovely little blue flowers. And we've left it. It looks absolutely gorgeous. And the thing about speedwell, it's an easy pull. You know, once it's done, it's really easy just to pick it out of the garden, you know, put it in with the chickens. They will absolutely love it. And the garden looks lovely for it.
Thanks for listening to the BBC Gardeners World Magazine podcast. So, if you've enjoyed this episode, please tell others about it and rate us in your podcast provider app. And we'll see you next time.